good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening to this podcast. Hello.
Do you think people listen in the morning mostly? Or like, when do you listen to podcasts?
I listen in the morning when I'm sort of getting ready for the day. I also listen sometimes in the car. My commutes are usually split like 50-50 between music and podcasts. So that, mm-hmm. I mean, that I think that's pretty normal is commute time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I went into this deli the other day, and just to paint a little word picture for you, it's a deli, mm-hmm. Italian deli, and it's just pastas, and they make sandwiches and salads and stuff for you. Mm-hmm. But it, again, it's a deli. It's not like a cafe. There's no table service, right? Mm-hmm. When you order your food at the deli, they then hand you a little handwritten ticket that you bring to the counter, and then you pay for it there. And there's a little, there's a tip section. But mm-hmm. my question is that a place to leave a tip? Because I know, you know, if there's table service involved, you leave a tip. Mm-hmm. You know, at a cafe, like you order a coffee, you're at a bar, and they're waiting on you, bringing you more water and whatever, and asking how you're doing. Mm-hmm. You have everything you need. You leave them a tip. But at a deli where they just like scoop out a hunk of pasta, put it in a container and hand it to you?
Well, I think, I guess it's kind of hard to tell, right? But maybe it's not that you're tipping that action of them giving you the food, but maybe it's that you're tipping, you know, they had to go through the work of creating that food, right? And they had to do all the other stuff related to servicing you that wasn't just sticking the spatula in the spaghetti or whatever.
When you go to Vons and you mm-hmm. go to the meat counter, the deli there, mm-hmm. you don't tip them because they're being paid by Vons.
Well, that's because you're inside Vons.
Right. But a deli is a deli. Like, even if you go to just like a butcher deli and I go in there and I order some mm-hmm. meat uncooked and they just wrap mm-hmm. that shit up, weigh it, give me a price, I'm not mm-hmm. tipping that guy, right?
Oh, I disagree. Like, what if you go to a deli and the guy said, you know, you say, you know, I'm thinking about this type of thing because I have this meal, and he says, oh, tell me more, and then he kind of suggests something to you, and you say, oh, I have this, like, this number of people, how much should I get? Like, if that guy goes through all that work and then gives you, you wouldn't tip him?
I think he's probably being paid more for his knowledge, for his expertise at that business, right?
Sure. Well,
I think the idea of tipping is to pass along paying wages to their employees, to their customers. You know? Uh-huh. So there's just like these big bowls of pasta and lasagna and meatballs mm-hmm. and, you know, eggplant parmesans and whatnot. And they just scoop it out, mm-hmm. put in a thing, weigh it for you. Like, there's very little prep involved for the people mm-hmm. I feel like I'm tipping.
Okay. So I think I agree with you that tipping should be exactly proportional to the amount of work that the person puts into
right.
servicing you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, a waiter who's really congenial and helps you out making a decision and all that kind of stuff, it's going to get like an okay tip. Somebody who just sticks a spatula in a bowl and gives it to you, maybe not so much, right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like in any other deli you go to, they just give you like a, you know, like it's those little tiny receipts that the ink's all smudged on. But this place, like, they don't have it. Okay, so, okay, here's a question. There's no tip jar out for cash tips. It's only when you pay with a card that the tip option is presented to you.
I think that's because the machine was configured that way and nobody changed it. Because once you get into a printed receipt that has a tip line in it, it gets very confusing, especially when I go to somewhere and I order before I get my food. And I see here's all the stuff I want and the person gives me a receipt after using my card and it has a tip line in it. Like, am I going to do a tip now when I haven't even gotten anything yet and all you did was push buttons on the cash register? Like, what if my food sucks?
Right, exactly. Like, right? It's...
That's what really gets me is, like, I'm not going to tip a priori. I'm not going to tip before I know anything about what I'm getting.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. I don't know. I mean, you go into a cafe and there's a tip jar right there. Usually it's got some attempt at being a clever little pun on the front of it. Or you go into a bar is a different thing because the guy's like making a drink. So, you know, you get one beer, you tip well for the first beer. And then, you know, subsequent beers, you can tip a little less. I don't know, man. I just feel like the deli's not the place.
Yeah, I guess I think I agree with you. I think for me, like, I used to really kind of worry about this and think like, same thing, right? Like, where do I tip? How much do I tip? And all that kind of shit. And like, this is a common problem that everybody talks about, right?
Yeah.
And something that somebody told me once has really stuck with me. And this was a girl who I was dating who then subsequently decided that she didn't want to date me anymore. Not related to this. And we were talking about tipping and I said, like, I usually do like 15%. And she said something like, I do 18%. And then if it's amazing or if it's any better than standard, I go higher. And I said, why do you 18? I thought 15 was like pretty standard. And she just said, this money is worth more to them than it is to me.
That's
yeah. I mean, I think really you can boil this down to something that we've said many times on the podcast, which is just don't be a dick, man.
Just don't be a dick, you know?
Yeah.
We are him and he is we, and we are all together.
Exactly. That's almost as good as my favorite Beatles song, which is don't be a dick, man. There's something about a glass onion in there too, but
yeah, and it's a yellow submarine. But, yeah.
Yeah. We all live in a yellow submarine and don't be a dick. Anyway, this is Total Immersion. This is a podcast in which we immerse ourselves in subcultures, which are cultures, I guess. Anyway, and learn that we don't know anything about anything. I am your host, Tom Craig.
I'm your also host, Rylan Sedevi, who is a little sick today, so forgive that. And what are we talking about this week?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about true crime.
Ooh, true crime.
What do you think?
Like, is this one of those new Netflix specials? Did we finally get a show on Netflix called True Crime where we talk about other Netflix shows about crime and serial killers? And
no, because you know it's not that, because if we actually got a Netflix show, it would be called Total Next Immersion. Netflixer.
Yeah.
Fuck. Edit this out.
I'm gonna let you trip over that.
So
one.
Yeah, so it's not that, no. So true crime is a genre of film, television, and novel that covers real-world crimes. And this is covered as well by people who just enjoy true crime and talk about it on the internet or in person.
So this is
a general interest, yeah.
Interest in things that actually happened.
Yes.
People have been into, like, murderers and serial killers forever.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it ticks the same thing in your head that like the Salem witch trials did back in the day, where like you're just sort of fascinated with things that are taboo, you know? Like, mm-hmm. What's that French saying for it's, I think it translates roughly to like dark thoughts or dark, yeah, dark actions or dark thoughts.
No, you're thinking of bruschetta, and it's not about that. It's more of a meal. I think it's on toast or something like that.
I do like that. That's pretty tasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but very similar. I could see the mix up.
Right, yeah. So the French saying basically means those little things in your head that you think about sometimes that you would like never actually do, right? And thinking about them makes you so uncomfortable that you know, it's like sort of course corrected itself, right?
Yeah. So it's like you're going up against the boundary.
Yeah, exactly. You're facing the darkness for a moment. So I think I think we've always had a fascination with the darkness or the evilness or the taboo. So, I mean, you know, I understand people being interested in true crime.
Yeah, totally.
He said after the first bullet point.
Yeah. So yeah, let's do some quick history on true crime. And this is in terms of writings, you know, and there are also all these other mediums that we talked about. So one of the most famous writers in this genre is a man named William Roughead.
Rugged?
R-O-U-G-H, like rough, E-A-D, like H-E-A-D, like head. So it's like rough, it's like a portmanteau of rough and head, but it's like Roughead.
Roughead.
He probably had a really hard time in school.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's why he just wrote so much.
Yeah, his teachers can never fucking pronounce his name. Man, I feel that.
Yeah, so between 1889 and 1949, he attended every murder trial of significance held in the High Court of Justiciary in Edinburgh.
Justiciary. Is that like...
basically the court.
Oh, they don't make juice there?
Yeah, there are no...
Oh, that's the juicery. Sorry.
Yes. It's like a creamery, but with juice.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's the High Court of Juicery in Brazil. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he just went to every single trial.
So he was like that one guy in the back left corner of the courtroom. And it's like, ah, yes, yes.
Furiously like scribbling everything right, down.
Just furiously scribbling, just like nodding to himself like, ah. You say he hit you with the candlestick. Ah.
Yeah. Yes. And the judge is like, every single week with this fucking guy.
Yeah. Every case, every day, he's in the back left corner of the room just going,
There's fucking William again. He's just like back there, like cackling to himself. Like, so he wrote essays. And I think like he started off really strong and had a lot of really cool sounding essays about these crimes. And then he kind of fell off towards the end. I think, let me know what you
maybe
think.
Maybe it kind of got to him.
Yeah. So essays including the following: Malice Domestic.
About being bad at home. Oh yeah, people like being bad at home, man. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
The Evil That Men Do, pretty straightforward. Right,
yeah, I mean, you know, I'd say it's a little sexist, that's a little one-sided for today's standards, but this is a while 1800s. Ago, so okay, yeah, fine, okay.
All right, what's your verdict? In Queer Street.
In Queer Street.
Rogues Walk Here.
Okay. Wait, is that his name? That's about him, that's a biography.
Yeah, it's actually in Ruffian's Walk Here.
Right, this is where I walk.
In Queer Street also is a pretty good one.
I like that one,
At that point, it was like queer as in strange, you know?
Right, like, okay, so he started the Series of Unfortunate Events books, right? There's the Goosebumps. Okay, there were Goosebumps.
Goosebumps. Oh, it's like Goosebumps.
It's like Goosebumps, Queer Street, and
Magic Tree House.
I'd read those books, actually.
Yeah, so he's got these heavy hitters, right? Malice Domestic, The Evil That Men Do. What's Your Verdict? In Queer Street, Rogues Walk Here. Right. And then he moves on to Mainly in Murder, and then More and More Murder, and then Nothing But Murder.
So Mainly Murder, which is obviously mostly about murder.
Because, at this point, he's like, God damn, like, I keep trying to make these books like really different and interesting, but it's really just all murder. It's just mainly murder.
It's just so much murder. So then he goes, you know what? Here's a book about murder and more murder for people who don't get enough murder in their life. And then he says, you know what? That's not enough. People want more. Here's a book, nothing but murder. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Literally just the word murder printed over and over and over again on pages.
Exactly.
For 1,000 pages.
And so I have to assume after that, he just got murdered.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, his followers probably got mad that he put out such like a really, it was like a really progressive meta book. Every chapter is called murder. Every paragraph is just the word murder over and over again. People got mad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
After Queer Street, he had such a hit with Queer Street. And Rogues Walk Here?
Mm-hmm.
Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got into murder. And then murder and more murder. And then nothing but murder.
I think he just had all of these things written on his wall in his apartment.
By things, you mean the word murder over and over again? Murder. Yeah.
Exactly, yes.
I wonder if he kept a running tally. Like, I wonder how many court hearings he attended? I mean, it must be like in the hundreds, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, what is that? Like 50 years? Yeah.
Yeah, every murder. No, 60 years. If he started at 25, he would have been 85.
Maths.
He would have been all murder by 85. Nothing but murder.
Yeah, that's crazy.
What happened to him after that? Do we know?
He got murdered. I don't know. So moving on. Yeah, so this is still very prevalent today, right? But it's really saturated. So you've got all the of these crime novels and all of these crime TV shows and movies, and there are just so many of them now.
Right.
That it's hard for any artist in any of these mediums to differentiate themselves.
Right, it goes back to my point about how people really grasp this stuff. They really latch on because it's like so sort of gutturally interesting because it's taboo, because it's bad.
Yeah. So it's almost like not even that interesting to talk about books and movies and stuff because they're, you know, there's just so many and like all of those books, like they look exactly the same, right? And I volunteer at a bookstore and we get so many murder mysteries in there. And they're like all like within about 10 pages, they're all the same length.
Oh God.
And they have very similar titles and very similar cover art. And like the books are the exact same size. And they're just, you know, like I can't imagine reading that many of them because it's just the same stuff with the name switch.
I wonder if there's such an easy formula for it. You could feed them all to an AI and it could spit out the quintessential murder mystery book.
Oh, hell yeah.
I bet you someone's already done that.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Much.
So I looked into a few internet communities, mm-hmm. one of them relating to the Columbine shooting in 1999.
Wow. Isn't that a little old?
It is. But I think in recent history, you know, recent by which I mean like the last 50 years, maybe.
Sure.
It's like one of the most prominent school related, you know, young Americans related shooting.
I wonder if people who were students at that time who were very affected by that. Maybe not literally there at Columbine, but I wonder if a lot of the active followers are people who were affected by that action at that time. I'm wondering if that's like a, you know, the majority there.
Yeah. And this is definitely something that is still talked about, you know. And one thing that I found interesting, and I read about these communities, there are a bunch of teenagers now who relate to the perpetrators of Columbine.
No.
Referred to as Columbiners.
I thought these are people who were interested in it.
Yes, these are people who are obsessed with the Columbine shooters.
The shooters, not the shooting.
The boys who, and they are boys, right? They're high schoolers who committed the crime, and they relate to them on these different levels and have their own blogs and things.
I'm wondering if this is like a weird backwards through the internet case of Stockholm syndrome. Once you've like sort of lived with it for a while, I'm wondering if you sort of start to peel back the person who committed that crime or your kidnapper, and like you start to relate to them, you know, you start to peel back the layers of the onion, and you start to see like, oh yes, they had problems at home too, or oh, they had bad grades too, you know, like.
Yeah. And I think that's the important part of it is that relation, right? So people are interested because maybe they just want to know more about this. Like they're interested in criminology. They find it interesting psychologically why people did this.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And that's the more kind of academic detached way of thinking about it. And there are other people who just relate to these boys on an emotional level, right? So there's a lot of talk on these blogs about suicidal thoughts, you know? And so both these guys had their journals put online.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
And so people have read through there and read what they wrote about, you know, feeling like they wanted to commit suicide and like all this stuff and related to those dark thoughts.
Right.
And because of that, wanted to know more and created blogs to talk about that and post content related to it.
So yeah, I'm feeling like this could be pretty negative here, but
yeah.
Is there help here? Are they relating to their feelings in writings like a, oh, there are more people out there like me kind of situation?
I definitely saw that a few times. But
okay.
It's hard to tell because with the internet, it's hard to tell when someone is serious or when they're posting something
sarcastic.
Quote, ironically, right?
Ironically, yeah.
Right. They're posting something they don't really agree with just to see what the response is. So there are a bunch of things on these blogs related to neo-Nazis, right? And which those people maybe honestly believed in, and they wanted to like copy the Columbine shooters and do things that they did. Or they just wanted to post content to rile up other readers and see what response they could get.
So trolling. Have you heard about swatting?
No, what's that?
Swatting is the act of calling in a bomb threat or a terrorism threat on a specific person or a specific business. So the SWAT team will show up and bust through the door and arrest that person and cause like, and rip apart their house and like destroy their house based on a fake call. Yeah, it's a real thing. People have gone to jail for it.
Whoa.
I mean, it usually get, you know, they always realize basically immediately once they've sort of rustled the guy up and torn apart the house, they're like, wait, this is like Joe Schmo in accounting.
Right.
From Bank of America in Ohio. Like, he's not a terrorist. There's no bomb here.
Right. Yeah.
And usually, pretty much every time, the perpetrator of the fake call goes to jail or gets reprimanded in some way. But that shit's real. So I'm, you know, you say, is this real or is this fake internet talk? But then there's that line, there's a gray space in between where the fake internet talk is real.
Yes. Yeah, I think there are definitely these different groups you see with these type of blogs, you know, people who really find the Columbine guys inspiring in some way and want to perpetrate terrible acts to copy them. You've got people who just find it interesting in terms of criminology, right? Like, why did they decide to do this? Right. What feelings did they have? And then other people who just relate to the feelings they had, who may or may not want to commit violence to themselves or others, but just kind of relate on an emotional level and want to know more. And I think you can be a part of any combination of those groups as well, which makes it all very confusing, especially when you're talking about it online with other people.
Christ. But wasn't there something about, wasn't like the Boston Marathon bombing, wasn't that like, didn't the internet kind of like help figure out who those guys were? Like, didn't they like sift through some photos or something? Or
right. Yeah. And that's one of the big examples of this kind of stuff that I looked up, because I think with like this Columbine stuff, it's kind of individualistic and people are talking about the same stuff, but it's how they're feeling and what they want to do. And with the Boston Marathon bombing, you had this whole kind of group of people on Reddit and other places on the internet working together to try to figure out who did
it. Wow. So like trial by committee, trial
of your peers.
More like mob. It's more of like it's a mobocracy.
Mob mentality?
Mobocracy is a real word, man.
No, it's not.
It is. It's governance by mob.
Mobocracy?
Yeah. Google that shit right now. I'll wait.
I am Googling that shit right now. Mobocracy. Rule or domination by the masses.
Hi, it's me, your friendly neighborhood right correct man.
Okay, yeah. So
that's my superhero name is right correct man.
Right, correct. So let's do a quick summary, I think is kind of the best way to talk about this.
Okay.
So the bombing itself occurred on April 15th, 2013.
God damn, it's 5 years ago. Holy shit.
Yeah, I know. On April 16th, a Redditor made a subreddit to consolidate information about the event. And by April 17th, it had 3,000 members. On April 18th, the FBI published photos of the suspects publicly.
Publicly, okay, not on Reddit. Okay, okay.
And then right after this, one Redditor suggested a similarity between one photo and a 22-year-old student named Soonhil Tripathi, who had gone missing before the bombings.
Whoa, wow. So,
he chose this guy who he had seen a picture of, you know, and said, hey, these two look similar.
Just connected two dots that may or may not be connected. And it's just who is just some random student? Yeah, 22-year-old student. Okay.
Yeah, just some guy who was, you know, happened to maybe kind of look like one of the pictures.
Sure. Yeah. Let's just go ahead and believe that.
Right. So there's no evidence here, right? And the subreddit, one of the rules was you have to have some amount of evidence before posting something. You can't just say maybe it was this person, but this post wasn't removed, even though it violated the rules, because the moderators were just swamped because, like, you know, 3,000 members in one day, there are just people on it just cranking out all these posts. So it's hard for them to find any individual post and delete it if it violated the rules.
Right. And that's to say, if they even know what is proper evidence and what's not, like, that's a lot of shit to go through.
Exactly. Yeah. So soon after this, a woman claiming to be a classmate of this guy, Soonhil Tripathi, she posted as well, suggesting a similarity between him and one of the FBI photos.
Oh, shit. Okay. So was she looking at Reddit? Oh, no. She saw the FBI photos and went, oh, I think I know that guy.
Maybe. I mean, she claimed to be a classmate of his. Who knows if she actually was?
That sounds like when they show you like a police sketch on the news, like, if you know this man, please call our tip hotline. Right. You know, it's basically that. You got to take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah. So I think it was separate, but both of these things contributed to the same outcome.
Okay.
Very soon after, like the next day or two, random people just began trying to contact his family because they couldn't contact him. So his family was just being inundated with calls and messages from strangers just saying, give us information, or things like death threats from strangers. God.
That's so fucked up, man. See, that's
who knew nothing about this.
Yeah, knew nothing about it. Didn't have any evidence. They just hopped on the bandwagon, hopped on the hate train, and just said, "We're going to call this one kid's family who we don't know anything about, and just send them hate."
Yeah. So soon after that, the two bombing suspects named Zokar and Tamerlan Tsarnev, basically two guys who are not this other guy we're talking about, These two guys killed a police officer of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology Police Department. So those are the two guys who actually did it. Because a few days later, they, you know, had killed somebody else. And the following day after that, somebody tweeted, BDP has identified the names. Suspect 1, Mike Malugeta. Suspect 2, Sunil Tripathi. So some Redditor just saw that this thing had happened at MIT in which a police officer was killed and said, you know, the police department says that this guy Tripathi was one of the suspects.
Holy shit.
Again, just grounded in no evidence, no facts at all. He just said, yeah, Tripathi, he was one of the guys.
That's scary.
And then a BuzzFeed reporter shared a tweet that also named Tripathi as a primary suspect.
Well, that's like making your relationship Facebook official.
Yeah, right?
Once BuzzFeed reports on it, you know, it's a sure, that's a surefire bet right there.
Yeah, that was a BuzzFeed article that was like, the 23 top suspects in the Boston bombing case. Number 4 will make you cry.
Sure, of course. They have to have a clickbait title. Absolutely.
It's got to be list form.
Right, yeah. So they get, you know, then they get a whole bunch of clicks, man. You got to get those advertisement numbers up.
At this point, you've got random guy who has been named by several people as looking slightly similar to a FBI photo.
Several random people.
Yeah. And then even more random people just saying that he was named the suspect, which isn't even true.
Right. Great.
And then this has just increased the number of people who are trying to contact his family, agreeing and saying, oh, we found the guy. Right. Like, we nailed it. We're like, good job, Reddit. Oh, this is the guy.
No.
On April 23rd, Sunil Tripathi was found dead in the Saconoc River in Rhode Island. So everyone's thinking, like, he did it,
he
right?
He did
like,
it, and he took his
own
life.
You know, he did all this stuff, then he killed himself, whatever, right? Like, this is the guy.
Right.
You know?
But?
And everyone on Reddit was super proud of themselves. Turns out that this guy actually committed suicide before the bombings even took place. So the two perpetrators were found, no relation to Tripathi.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Right.
This is just some guy who had killed himself because he had mental health issues.
Right.
And because of Reddit, his family was just harassed to no end.
Right. As if the death of their son wasn't enough. I'm usually all for the internet, but this is the problem with mob mentality, man. It's just a vicious cycle of confirming what the person before them had said. It's like a vicious cycle of confirmation bias. They're just picking out little pieces of info that prove what they've already sort of decided in their head. And they just put their own pieces together in the puzzle that fits for them. And then it comes out that the dude killed himself before the bombings even happened.
Sometimes it's not even confirmation bias. It's just hearsay, right? There's not even any data to use to support the conclusion you already have. You're just saying, well, somebody else said it, so it must be
true. Confirmation bias, but on hearsay and not on articles or data or facts or findings. God damn it, man.
It's all hearsay.
Internet, I love you, but you're letting me down. You're not doing great on this one.
You know, as I discussed before, like, this stuff is really prevalent in our culture, right? And I think us feeling like we know about it, right? After having watched Dexter, you know, and listening to podcasts about people who, like, you know,
that's a good show though. Dexter.
After having listened
to
all this stuff, watched all this stuff, read all this shit, we think that we know about it, and then we get online and other people claim that they know about it. So this is clearly a bad thing in this situation, right? Like, subcultures on the internet are not a bad thing, right? But in this situation, this culture enabled something really bad to happen when it should have been left to the professionals, right? So my question to you is, can and should we stop these types of things from happening? Is there ability or prerogative to prevent something like this from happening again?
I think this comes down to free speech. Like, you can't take away people's right to look at publicly available photos and try and put pieces together. Someone just made a bad call and everybody just kind of hopped on board and just started saying that it was that guy. But I think you can't take away, I don't think you can take away people's right to try and put pieces together themselves, man. I think that's part of society. That's part of America. That's part of culture, you know? People have been doing that forever. The problem here is that the internet has amplified people's ability to screw over somebody else's life based on nothing. You know, if this kind of thing had happened back in the 40s or 50s, the culture and the subcultures and the communities surrounding it would have been a lot smaller and a lot more fragmented. And you maybe would have had like a couple weirdos in town who thought they knew the truth and would harass people about it, maybe. But then you just write that off like, those are just the three fucking weirdos. We don't care about them. The problem here is that this is over 3,000 people. I'm assuming way more by the end of it. I think you can't take anyone's right away to look at publicly available info and come to their own conclusions. You just have to take it with a huge, huge grain of salt.
Right.
This is why we do have professionals like the FBI.
Yeah, exactly. Like, those people should be left to do their job, which is figuring this stuff out, right? Maybe if we have some very, very pertinent and specific and helpful piece of information, we can share it with them. But it's not our job to solve the crimes.
People call in with tips all the time for police, and the police follow up on that, whether or not they believe it's a valid tip, you know? And that's up to the professionals to decide. I think the same goes here. This is just an unprecedented situation.
And I think, to your point earlier, the difference between now and 40s or 50s or something like that is speed and breadth, right? You have this ability to talk to so many different people in different places at different times and do so very quickly that the ability for something to become viral or to spread to thousands, hundreds, millions of people, it's so available and happens so often and easily. And it wouldn't have happened a decade ago.
Yeah.
So that's good. You know, that's good for good ideas that help everyone. It's bad for bad ideas, right? So it kind of leaves us with the same question we always have about the internet, which is, how do we use this thing so that we use it for good and not for bad, right? Like, how do we prevent ourselves and each other from inciting these bad things from happening? And I don't have an answer.
It's like partially an internet problem, but more than that, it's media literacy and being able to look at an article and parse out bits of the article that will tell you basically whether or not this person's making shit up or there's an actual basis in fact in that article. And I think a lot of people either don't know how to read media accurately or just ignore that feeling or ignore that incentive entirely and just go to reddit.com/Boston Bomber, click first link, call family, you know? There's no like second guessing. There's no thought process of what does this mean? Where is this coming from? Should I believe it? Do I believe it? I think that's the problem, is media literacy.
To reiterate my point before, I agree the internet itself is not evil or good. It's just a tool that we use, right? But the question comes down to, can you trust people to act responsibly? And this proves to me that the answer is no. And because of that, the technology needs to change because people won't.
The answer is definitely no. People won't change.
Exactly. And like, I don't know like what that looks like, what it could be, but I think it's kind of a defeatist attitude to say you can't change the internet. I think we need to work harder to come up with a solution to this that's not the same as just hoping that people become responsible, because I don't think it
will. Yeah, true. But I do love me some Mindhunter on the Netflix there, man.
So good. Yeah, I love it.
Netflix is killing it right now. You have another question?
Yeah.
You have a final? You have a wrap up?
I don't, man. I think...
You're good?
I think I'm good.
Well...
Sorry to everyone that this was not a funny episode.
I mean, it wasn't as funny, but I think we talked about some interesting stuff here. I feel like, you know, I've learned some stuff from you about fucking Reddit and people's, you know, sort of propensity to be interested in this stuff. I don't know. I kind of want to hear what, you know, our listeners have to think, as per usual. You can do that on Twitter. I'm at Rylan Sedevy.
And I'm at the Tom Craig.
And you can use the hashtag #grainofsalt.
Dig it.
And if you have any suggestions for the future about topics you want us to talk about, you can email those to us at totalimmersionpodcast@gmail.com. You can listen on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, everywhere you already are. You can do that if you subscribe And you can hear us every Wednesday. We'll put in little asterisks right there for something we're going to talk about in a little bit. We'd really appreciate a 5-star rating on any platform that you listen on. Push us in the algorithm up to the top so people can explore on the interwebs and find us. That'd be really helpful. Last thing I want to say, so this is episode 30 for anyone who's been listening since the beginning.
Big ups.
To those of you who have, thank you. And Tom and I have become more and more driven to make this podcast something that we're proud of and something that we feel like is actually good content that people want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And in our quest to maintain a steady growth of quality, we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus so we can step back and take a look at this project from sort of a fresh pair of eyes for each of us. Mm-hmm. So basically what that means for the listeners is we're going to be not producing any more podcasts for the next 4 weeks. So we're going to take a month-long hiatus, and then we will return to our regularly scheduled programming every Wednesday, every week. Hopefully it'll be better. Hopefully it's something that we're more proud of. Hopefully it's more interesting. Maybe I'll go to some improv classes and become an actual funny person, a funny man. Maybe I'll buy a clown nose and a clown horn, and I'll pull a scarf out of my sleeve that never ends, and I'll learn big tricks that you won't be able to see because this is an audio format and there's no visuals.
Can you be like the clown from It?
Does that mean
hello, Georgie? Would you like your boat? That was a joke for anybody who's seen It. So for like the two or three of you, you're welcome.
Good joke. Good joke.
Thanks.
Yeah. Anything you want to add on that?
I'm excited to see what we can learn from kind of taking a break and taking this in and then coming back to it with fresh eyes.
That's what we're going to do. We care more and more about this project every day that we do it, pretty much, which mm-hmm. is not something we really planned on when we started. It was sort of a half-assed start, but now that we both really care about it, we want to step back and then be able to jump back into it wholeheartedly with new ears, fresh minds.
And whole-assedly. We don't want to give you a half-assed thing. Like, we want to come back with full ass.
Full ass.
I plan to do a lot of squats for the next month, so I want to come back with a full
ass. So many squats. Listeners.
And it is, you know, like you said, it's an audio format, but I think they can tell.
Will be able to tell that you've been squatting. You know what? I can already tell that you've started. How about that?
Stop. Really? Get out of here.
When you ask me if those pants make your ass look big, I'm going to say, hell yeah.
Aw, dude. Oh, man. Fuck yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Please stay subscribed so when we do re-upload in a month from now, you will see that. It will be on Wednesday. It will be on the fifth Wednesday. There will be 4 Wednesdays, 4 weeks. And then the week after that, we'll be back. Better, happier, more productive. I don't know what date it is
because I've had 2 beers, but you know, you do the math.
So we don't have like a date, time, calendar savant on the show that can immediately tell us what day it's going to be. So,
Jeremy?
No, nothing from Jeremy.
He's not here. He's not here.
He's useless anyway. Again, thank you for listening. We'll be back in a month. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Later.